You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
Hi, folks. For those who aren't feeling as zoned as I am right now, it's been the last 2 days have been a long day, haven't they? The idea behind this when I put this into the wiki was just, you know, no matter how comprehensive a program like this can be, there's always going to be things that you wish were covered that were not covered. And the things you learn here are always going to generate new questions and new ideas, that sort of thing. And so I figured it would be a good idea to have some time at the end and some space for us to bring up any questions that didn't get resolved that you wish were, or any new questions that came up. And just to have kind of an open conversation with each other. So I haven't planned anything for this at all. I figure it's just totally open to you guys. Does anyone want to start with a question, or should we throw in some seeds? Cool. Good.
Hi, I'm Ron, and I'm from Alabama, and my podcast is The Final Taxi. I was just wanting to find out what different people use in regards to stats, what this people feel is the best way to get statistics as far as your podcast is concerned. I know there's many of them out there, but if we could just kind of have some people who kind of just say what they feel the best way to get their statistics are.
Oh yeah, that's a very easy question. With it's kind of a hornet's nest. Anyone? Those of you who in here who are podcasting, what do you use? What do you use to find out how many listeners you have?
Anybody?
I use Feedburner, so I tend to use their stats. What I found was early on was that the stats I was getting from Feedburner, I simply wasn't satisfied with. Mm-hmm. So I moved hosting my files myself to hosting them through Libsyn, and I had a pretty good idea of what kind of percentage I thought they were off. And when I moved my files there, which Libsyn will track every single download, so I encourage you to use them. I did have some early on issues, technical issues with them, but I wound up going back to my hosting my file myself because the numbers that I was fairly certain on the percentages that Feedburner was off turned out to be true. So I kind of use that as an algorithm now. But you can provide special links to your actual file and mask them with a Feedburner link, and Feedburner will check your downloads too. And I believe Rob Walsh did a test of Libsyn and Feedburner and Feedburner's download statistics tool, and he found them to be pretty much identical. I mean, they were, of course, he's dealing with thousands. So out of, say, 5,000 or 6,000 downloads, they were within like 50 to 100 of each other, which is pretty good.
Okay. For those who aren't familiar with what Feedburner is, anyone want to talk about what Feedburner does? I can answer that myself, but... Okay. All right. Feedburner, for those who aren't familiar with it, is a it's kind of a value-added service for your syndication feed. We mentioned earlier on what RSS feeds are and how they allow people to subscribe to your podcast and get updates automatically. Feedburner, if you allow them to provide your feed for you, you kind of redirect whatever feed your blog generates or however else you have an RSS feed. You run it through them and then give out their URL to your listeners, and they do some value-added features. They will add in the iTunes information for all those tags and things, and offer a few other nice little widgets. And one thing they do is, I just said, they provide stats. Particularly, they provide a count of how many people checked your feed, how many people are subscribed to it that checked it in the last 24 hours. Then they give you a nice date-based graph so you can see your trend of how much your stuff is growing.
Another question?
Ginger Campbell from Alabama, the Brain Science Podcast. I think one of the most useful things about Feedburner is that if you, in the future, want to change where you're hosting your files, you can change them around and you don't have to change the Feedburner part, which I understand that if you ever change your feed in iTunes, trying to change your feed in iTunes is a big hassle. But if you've got iTunes pointed at your FeedBurner feed, then you can change where your files are pretty easily. And so it gives you flexibility, like if you start out on Libsyn and then decide you want to host yourself or that sort of thing. So I think that's, especially if you're not sure where you're going to be in the future, that FeedBurner gives you some flexibility.
If I need to change my actual feed, then as she's saying, you can just go into your FeedBurner account, take the feed out, put the new one in, and you're good to go.
Anybody burn their own feed? As in, like, hand create your feed?
We have a client we actually do that for, because we haven't finished redeveloping a site to do it automatically yet.
But this is what the FeedBurner stats look like. And you can actually do things like, get a nice little graph of what client they're using, so you can see what percentage of people are listening with Windows and Macs and iTunes and et cetera. As you see, iTunes kind of dominates podcast feed subscriptions these days, at least until Microsoft finally gets around to recognizing that podcasts exist.
Hi, I'm Laura from Rocky Horror Pod Show and Coffee and Tea Show, and I'm wondering if anybody is working on some way of telling, of all the shows that are downloaded, how many people actually listen to them.
Anybody want to cover that? I can give some. Yeah, there are a couple of services out there that are kind of shooting for that, but they're not shooting for it for you and me. There's a company called PodBridge that has developed kind of like an iTunes plugin that will track and will actually like track people's listening habits to see how much of a show they listen to and report back to them. They have clients like the New York Times and things like that. And as far as I can tell, they've never given anybody any incentive to actually download their iTunes plugin. Yeah, why are you going to go and grab somebody else's thing that's going to track your listening habits and report back to somebody, you know? I'd want to be paid for that or something, you know, get some kind of advantage to me in order to do that. I actually have been working on developing a business idea for something like, to try and improve podcast statistics measurement and reporting. I was actually with Rob Walsh. We were developing a business plan together. It hasn't gone anywhere fast just because of our own time priorities. If someone wants to throw some venture capital at us, Yeah, but no. We have some solid ideas for how that could be developed, and I don't mind talking about that because I figure, secrecy is not how businesses succeed. But I do think that it is a valid need these days, and especially if you want to bring advertisers, and they want to know not just who subscribed, but they want to know, or is anyone actually listening to this thing?
You know, I wonder here, and at the risk of monopolizing the microphone. I can't shake the feeling that that's coming from the perception that people have of magazines and traditional media that, well, how do I know anybody got to page 39 where my ad is? I think that as podcasters, I have a good idea that people are downloading my show or listening to it. They're already compelled to get there. I guess I assume that because mine is such a niche of a niche of a niche.
It's like, you know your audience.
But I know my audience well enough, exactly, and I have all that feedback come back, and I know how I consume podcasts. I don't download them unless I listen to them. Now, I may not listen to them the day I download them, but I put them in my rotation and listen to them. And if it's a podcast I'm not listening to, I delete it. I unsubscribe. Mm-hmm. So I think we can make assumptions, and I know assumptions are dangerous, but we can make assumptions about our audience that magazine subscribers can't, because they've got college students out there selling, these things in parking lots. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they just want raw numbers. So they figure if I sell 1 million copies of Business Weekly this week, then odds are, a percentage read them. But we have a much better. The fact that he's got these numbers in iTunes means that people are doing it. Look at every day. I mean, you can see all of the days there. Now, if these 2,000, 3,000 people were not listening to a show, he would start seeing that drop off. It would be dramatic, I think.
Yeah. And again, the thing about FeedBurner, this does not count your listeners and doesn't count the people coming to your webpage and downloading it straight off your webpage. They only know about the people who got your podcast off of your feed.
Right.
actually, if you do it right, it can track what goes on your website.
Right, if you put the right plug.
Right, we turn right on the standard stats thing on ours,
okay,
and that creates a new URL. And on our website, we actually reference the direct feed burner link on our website. Yeah, and you know that way it goes through FeedBurner, and FeedBurner will actually tell us, okay, 30 people clicked on this show on this day and downloaded it directly. Yeah, the item link clicks, actually, which you've got turned on. We actually give out the link to FeedBurner on our site. We do the site tracking now too, which is kind of neat, and shows actually like where people came into your site, where they go from your site. It provides a little bit more data than AllStats for us.
I assume it would mean the MP3. But again, you guys are using this. Oh, go ahead.
We don't use the enclosure one, but essentially the enclosure, like the item link is just what's in the link tab at the top. The enclosure is what's in the enclosure tab. The way that this is set up, which is also the way we set it up over at All Games, is that it changes the link but not the enclosure. If you check the item enclosure thing, it will actually change the enclosure link to go through FeedBurner, and that way it will also track how many people downloaded your enclosure rather than how many people just clicked on the link to download it.
Very cool. So, yeah, I will say from my stats, I don't use FeedBurner to track my individual downloads. I do use the PodPress plugin for WordPress. This was discussed in a couple of other sessions earlier. But if anyone wants to know what that looks like, remember how to spell my own podcast URL. Yes. Hold on. I'll show you what it looks like. Yeah. The PodPress plugin, you know, this puts links both into your RSS feed and onto the web page. Yeah, it gives you a nice little flash player for people to be able to, you know, start downloading. If you were close enough to my laptop speakers, you'd hear that. But when you go into your admin interface with WordPress, if you're using this blogging platform, and if the Wi-Fi is not too slow, wouldn't it be great if it went out right now? Okay. This was slightly out of date, but you know, it actually gives you, you know, how many people downloaded it from the RSS feed, how many people just clicked on the direct link from your webpage, and how many people use that funky little flash player to play each one. And it can actually give you... The newer version has nicer graphs than this, but... Yeah. It'll give you, yeah, which post was which and what the actual numbers were for each one. And if you give it a little bit of time, this is not a fast thing, but it'll actually track how many unique people downloaded each one. So if someone downloads the same episode twice, in most stats, that'll show up as... Yeah, as if it was two listeners. But with this, they actually track the IP address. So they say, okay, that's the same person downloading the same file twice. We're just going to count them once. Any other questions about stats before we go to something else? Okay. Well, it sounds like we're done with stats then. So which question?
Next question.
I missed the session on podcasting and search engine optimization. I mean, how the podcasts help your ranking in Google. And I was wondering if anyone who went to the session could tell me a couple of main points of is it mostly from putting the transcriptions up there?
There will be a podcast of the session, so... Okay. You can listen to it later. Yeah, okay, cool.
One of the key ideas was the importance of the blog post you have with your podcast and your show notes, and the importance of your title matching your text matching your title. And I remember in particular the speaker recommended that the first line of your show notes should be almost the same thing, it's what's in your title, because they said that the search engines look for making sure your content matches the keywords that you have claimed fit.
Yep. Does anyone actually transcribe their podcast or have, you know, put out the full text of your podcast? You do?
Aaron Brazell, Ideas Unleashed. We don't actually transcribe it ourselves. There is a service online called Casting Words. Mm-hmm. You can take a look at it, castingwords.com. They basically charge a flat fee. It's something like 45 cents a minute or something. It doesn't matter how long it takes them to do it. It's per minute of audio. It's actually, they're really, really good. And I can definitely recommend them.
I remember people talking about something. You also get more highly ranked if someone has left a comment about your podcast, and then you comment back or something. That is also something.
Well, it could be if they link to you from their site, then that's good for your Google ranking.
Okay.
And often, if they do leave comments, they'll probably include links to their site, etc. That's really. That was the big innovation that put Google on top of the whole search engine market, was that, they ordered their search results based on how many other pages linked to this page, and they put the ones with the most links to them on top, figuring that that's where the smartest discussion must be happening, is the one that everybody else wants to link to. Anybody else? Any questions?
I've noticed I get a lot of Google hits for every show, since I've got a lot of my shows are stuck into different portals. So every time that also links, that brings you up too.
Yeah, that's true. Anything that, anytime your show ends up anywhere, then that's going to help.
Carter Harkins. We also noticed that on our service, it's sort of an unintended consequence. We were busy building a commenting system for audio and video on the web, and of course, podcasting is included in that. But we also discovered that when we were outputting all of the comments that were occurring in our player to HTML pages, and Google was crawling those, and so people were actually getting, we started getting a lot of traffic from Google and didn't realize what was going on, but people were actually Googling a search term that had been described in annotations in our player, and then clicking on that link and jumping right into the middle of a podcast where that particular subject was actually being discussed. They weren't even looking for a podcast, but they suddenly discovered a podcast because of what they were searching for and were brought right into the middle of it. So as much information, comments, links, annotations, transcriptions, all of those kinds of things, if you can figure out a way to attach it directly to your podcast, suddenly people can start discovering that podcast, even if they weren't looking for a podcast. And that's really important.
Unintended consequences can be positive and negative.
How exactly is the best way to go about doing that? I mean, I do my show on the cheap, I guess, from a technical standpoint. Even though I've been doing this a year and a half, I by no means code my own RSS feed. So I harness iTunes for most of that. I put all my information in my iTunes info page and then convert that to an ID3 tag. So should I be filling out as many of those fields as I can, and will all of those convert to ID3? Does anybody know if all of that gets converted or what gets converted in the information in your iTunes?
I don't know. ID3 tags are a good idea, so that if your listeners don't get hacked off and they're looking in their iPod, it just says
okay.
But in terms of the search engine, I'm not really sure. That's what I use my blog for, my own personal podcast. I generally will write a fairly thorough description of all the things that I've talked about in my podcast, because I know my blog is going to be the thing that Google crawls and can consume information. They really can't access audio and video files to be able to know what's inside. Our service does kind of give that reference point and sort of helps to flesh out or describe what is contained in audio and video, because our posts and comments live on timeline. So when those posts and comments are harvested by Google and included in search results, then people can click on that link and jump right to that spot in the podcast where things are occurring that are relevant to what they were searching for. But what we've done, I mean, we've crowdsourced our podcast. I don't make my show notes anymore. I let my audience do it. I just don't look. I can't remember the name of the site that I was thinking of. You guys probably know already, so if anyone knows it, just go to CrowdAbout, leave a time post at this spot in the podcast, and tell us what the darn link is, because I'm too busy to figure it out. And they do it. I've crowdsourced all the work that I used to have to do for my podcast to my audience because they want to participate. They want to, you know, add value to my podcast.
Just a housekeeping note. I know we can all hear each other in here, but it won't show up in the recording if we don't speak into the mic. So, anybody else?
I'm just about positive Google does not actually check your iTunes page or anything like that. So, it's a good idea to have a website that contains all, that makes visible to a human all the information that you want people to know about your site. Even if you think most of your people are listening by iTunes, it's never going to be everyone listening with iTunes, unless maybe you're iProng or somebody who, your show is only about the iPod and iTunes. Yours are probably almost all iTunes users. Except for that, you generally want to hit a broader market. So make sure that, your site includes all the same information that you would get inside iTunes, because some people will find your podcast that way, inside the iTunes client. You want your information there. Some people are just going to do it from a Google search or from a link that someone else put on their blog. They're going to go to your website instead. And so your website needs to have, the same episode notes and all that stuff. Transcribing, if you're making a business out of your podcast, there can be some value in paying to have transcriptions done. For most podcasters, it's probably not worth the money you put into it. But if you can, then it's a good way to up your Google ability that much more, if that's a word. If Google's even a word.
I try to write a lot more in my podcast notes than I actually leave in the podcast, and try to do new artwork each time, just kind of as an Easter egg for my listeners.
That's fun. Do you put that on your MP3 cover art? Oh, good. Cool.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to, I realize that, iTunes does the same thing with its aggregation. It pulls your comments, and that's where I do most of it. I just was a little confused of how much of the ID3 stuff went out. That was kind of my point.
Can I change subjects?
Please.
To a new question. I just created a website in Flash. It's totally Flash, a Flash movie, the whole darn thing. And I was wondering if that's any detriment to having podcasts inside a Flash website, or, as far as being searchable?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't think it would help with searchability.
It depends on how the Flash is structured. Our service is done in Flash as well. The player, all the comments and things happen in Flash, which Google would never be able to access our database to get that information. It's completely walled off from Google. But we do an output of all of the comments and posts and metadata that's been created into HTML, which Google crawls all over and can consume. So I make sure that I've designed websites in Flash because I like the animation and the graphics. I've done it for clients, but I've told them that by doing that, search engine optimization, you're going to be more or less invisible to Google. For every part of your website that's presented in Flash, Google will not see it. So, we try to create HTML, sort of replicate that information into another format. And even if we just leave a link, somewhere at the bottom of the page outside of the Flash movie that says, view this page in HTML, Google can click on that and suddenly everything in your site is now visible to Google. It can be the same information presented just very boringly, but if someone doesn't have Flash installed in their browser, they can click on that and Google can click on it and still consume all the information on your site. So.
I also have a suggestion. Maybe put StumbleUpon and Reddit and Dignation and all that stuff so that people can actually link you to another search site that would maybe find it.
Those are all social bookmarking sites that she's mentioning, by the way. And there are, I think, almost more social bookmarking sites than there are social persons at this point. But there's some pretty good general purpose ones. I always find a few hits in my web server logs from stumbleupon.com. And it's very difficult to track that back and find out exactly what they stumbled upon from where and from whom and, you know, who was saying what. Yeah, I can never figure that out from StumbleUpon. But, huh? Okay, yeah, if you know how.
Are you a member of StumbleUpon?
No.
Well, maybe what it is you pick out interest you are, and then you click on it, and it will take you to your interests.
Okay.
So you actually pick out the categories you want, and they find it, and then when you say, I like it or I don't like it, it'll say, oh, we'll find something similar to what you liked.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
As a web developer, Ron from the Final Taxi is a web developer as well. When you need a text link as well for those who are blind, the Flash they can't see that at all in any other readers for them. And I don't know where this goes. Another thing in regards to, maybe we can incorporate this, but we need to start thinking about the handicapped when we're making certain pages and along that line, because I know the government will probably get their hands involved in it eventually, where you'll have to have certain things along that line.
That's actually a great point, and we were pretty concerned about accessibility when we used Flash so extensively with what we did. There is a way, though, to add a tag, so long as your site is tabbable and you can tab through the various clickable elements in the Flash player, then it will still report. It'll still hook up with the audio, I forget what it's called, but the thing that will more or less announce to someone who's sight impaired what things are clickable, what these things do, so that as they tab through, it'll announce all those features and functions. And that's important if you use Flash to make sure that you go that extra step, because it doesn't do it by default like HTML would. So yeah, make sure you include that so you're accessible.
Any other questions, tips? If anyone has anything else to ask, we can turn this into like kind of a pimp your podcast kind of.
Another question for Ron with the Final Taxi. In the next year and a half, let's just say that when we start having terabyte hard drives, which some of us probably already do, when we go to having a large number of podcasts, where are we going to start drawing the line when we start having in the hundreds of podcasts? Where do we start going and cutting back? Where do we say this is history, we need to keep it? And where do we go, okay, is there an unwritten law that we're only supposed to have so many podcasts out there?
You mean that you as an individual listener are listening to?
No, not as a podcaster. How many should we have available for the people?
Oh, in terms of your podcast episodes.
In terms of how many people can come back and listen to your archives.
I thought you meant being like subscribed to hundreds of
podcasts. No.
Well, if you have a lot of time.
Okay. That's fine. But I'm talking in regards to how much do we keep as far as an archive. Where are we in regards to, do we say to a certain point of archive? And I guess it would also depend on what your podcast is for history's sake.
I have a highly opinionated answer to that. I'm sure everyone is shocked and surprised. But let's hear some other opinions first.
Hi, this is Amber. It's not really an opinion, just a statement of fact that our friend Omar has over 200 episodes of his podcast. He's been podcasting since 2005, which means he is an old-timer. But so that's really all I wanted to say, was that he has over 200, and I think most people that I've seen don't. And so maybe, I don't know, that's all I have to say. I just wanted to throw that out there if people think that 200 is a lot or not very many.
Well, you want people to, this is Laura from Coffee and Tea Show and Rocky Pod. You do want people to get your old shows, but isn't there a limit on your RSS feed that iTunes is going to kind of go flaky after a while?
Well, just RSS.
Yeah, it's two sort of different things in terms of what's on your feed and what's...
Helps not to step on the wire while you're trying to talk. Most RSS feeds limit to 10 or 20 posts, so you... Typically, iTunes can handle that automatically.
It's not a technical limit. It's just that's how many people tend to do fairly frequently.
Well, the blogging software oftentimes includes the most recent 10 or something in the feed and just continues to do that. I know by default, or
sorry, for posterity, my name is Carter Harkins, and by default, WordPress's RSS feed only keeps, I think, the top 10 in. You can change that to keep more and specify what that is, but I'm pretty sure it's just the top 10. But I'm amazed how many people in our service Crowdabout, they'll add their feed, and you know, I'm always curious to see how many podcasts will come in as part of their feed. We had one the other day. It was like 177 episodes pulled in from their one feed. All that was included in their feed. I mean, it was a monster feed. But it had it all in there. I'm assuming all the way back to episode one, but I didn't look to see. But yeah, monster feed. Me personally, I like the idea of keeping all of your stuff available. It doesn't make as much sense, I think, for like a news show that's so topical and current event kind of thing. That wouldn't be really necessary. It wouldn't be useful after a period of time. But if it's evergreen content, such as like Escape Pod, for example, well, man, I want them all from day one.
Bobby Blackwell, Fall Games Radio. If you use FeedBurner, stop at 256K of a file size, because then FeedBurner won't look at your feed anymore and it breaks.
Yeah, for your RSS feed file.
Yeah, the RSS feed. If it's over 256K and you use FeedBurner, it's going to send you a message and not update anymore and all that stuff. We keep the latest 30 on all games. We keep the latest 30 on the feed, and then all of them are available on the website. So if people come to the website, they can download them straight from there, but we only keep the latest 30, which for my show is more of half a year, but for our daily show, that's like maybe a month or two's worth of shows.
Yeah. I'll give my opinion. Carter actually predicted my opinion, because, Escape Pod, my main podcast, we still get downloads every week on our first few episodes, and there are people, because we do science fiction short stories. They're not time-based or anything. Yeah, there are people, if they discover the podcast, some folks actually go back and listen from episode one onwards. So it really wouldn't make any sense for me to ever take my content off the web. In terms of, from a technical standpoint, the web host that I'm using, for $15 a month, I have like 400 gigabytes of space on my web host and like 4 terabytes of transfer. So I'm not going to run out of web space just keeping my old episodes on there. Even if you're using something like Libsyn, the Liberated Syndication, it's the most popular podcast host out there. For $5 a month, they've got a really cool system, and this is what makes them the most popular. That your $5 a month pays for like 100 megabytes of upload space. If you want to pay more, you can get more. But that's how much you can upload every month. At the end of 30 days, that MP3 file you uploaded gets moved off into their archive servers where they keep it forever. As long as you're a paid customer of Libsyn, it stays in their servers, and then you get the disk space back again. So they keep all of your old stuff available on like slightly slower speed servers, figuring that it's your most recent episodes that it's going to have the most demand. But they put it on older, cheaper boxes, but it's still available for people to download. And then each month you can just fill up your disk space again with new episodes. So they anticipated that as well in terms of being able to keep all of your old content available. I think all of your content should stay available on the web unless you have a reason to take it off, like a daily news show. Even there, people may want to find out for historical research. Right. How did the Iraq War start or whatever? If you were a podcast, if you had a news podcast, then maybe they want to go back and listen to what the coverage was back at the time. So there can still be value in keeping it on the web. On your feed is a different matter. The RSS feed, the intent of that is just to let people know when there's new stuff out. So your feed does not have to contain every single episode. Having the last 20, last 30, even the last 10, whatever, is okay, because all that's there for is that if they check now and then they check 2 weeks from now, they want to find out if anything was new.
That was you made a lot of my points. This is Joe Polk, MTB Cast. I haven't pimped my show enough with the microphone. unless it's a space issue, I would say keep it up there. A lot of times I will take some of my shows. I've been on since 2005 as well. I don't know how they did 200 shows. I'm doing one a week. So, but sometimes I'll take certain ones and I'll kind of collectively put them into a page that they can go back and get. And then I don't have to worry about them clogging up my feed. So that's an idea as well.
Predictionary is one of my favorite podcasts. They do like a word history a day. It's like a 3-minute long podcast. They have 500 shows now because they've been doing it daily. and they've been doing a daily for a couple of years. And you know, he had a kind of novel solution to the whole problem of his feed getting too big. He started making archive RSS feeds, where he had like, yeah, he has now an RSS feed that has like his first 200 episodes, and then another RSS feed that has his next 200 episodes. So he can keep those available in iTunes for people to grab them one by one. I think that kind of complicates the issue a little bit. I wouldn't necessarily take that approach, but it is one other thing that someone has done. Ron, what's Final Taxi? I'm curious what your podcast is about. That name intrigues me.
What would be the Final Taxi is the last taxi you'll ever have to pay for, which, of course, is the hearse. What I did is I have a show that basically is a mixture of nostalgia and obituary column. So anyone who has died in the recent last couple of weeks, who has touched their lives in some way, such as a musician, movie person, writer, inventor, someone who has touched your life in some way, I will talk about them. And a lot of the ones who I talk about are people who are very obscure. People who you go, I'll go, Patrice Holloway, I'll throw that name out. Do you know who Patrice Holloway is?
No.
Okay. Do you know the song You Make Me So Very Happy by Blood, Sweat, and Tears? She wrote that. Her most famous thing is that she was the first African-American cartoon character on Josie and the Pussycats. I bet you've seen that cartoon. But one of the ones that most everybody here has at least seen is that she was the background singer to Joe Cocker in his Beatle cover of You Get By With a Little Help From My Friends, and that she was the black female singer, which of course was also the theme to The Wonder Years. So so she's touched everybody's life here in some way or the other, and that's what my podcast is about, just to kind of...
That's a good pitch.
Touch it. Neat.
Anybody, we have a couple of minutes left, and if questions are done, if anybody else wants to just stand up real quick and give us a 1 or 2 minute rundown of what you do, feel free.
I'm one of those guys that does the live interactive podcast thing. It's creatively titled The Bobby Blackwolf Show because I was doing it before I realized that I needed to have like gaming in the title for iTunes to recognize it. But basically we cover video games, and it's a weekly talk show. Actually, tonight it's Sundays at 8 p.m. I do it from my apartment. I have a live chat room, live callers. We talk about recent news in video games, the social issues around video games. You know, like we touched on, you know, the bully controversy, you know, trying to, you know, this lawyer in Florida trying to turn it into a public nuisance so it can't be sold. He failed. And some of like the laws that some states are trying to pass that also failed. And we just talk about stuff like that, talk about independent games, games people probably haven't heard of as well. And I've been doing it, I think tonight's the 87th week in a row that I've been doing it, or 88th week in a row, something like that. So, but we record it live over on allgames.com, and then I put it up as a podcast feed on probably tomorrow. Monday is usually when I edit it down. I edit down the live show, take out the pauses, the ums, some of the us, and some of the other stuff, and put out, you know, turn the hour into about 50 minutes and put that on the feed.
And how long does it take you to take 10 minutes out of your show?
3 hours.
Yeah.
Because they're all in 4 second chunks.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to the whole thing twice.
Editing sound can take a very long time. It is worth it for the final result because, you know, your listeners appreciate it that much more, but it's not a fast process.
And from what I've been told is that people can't tell that I edit it. Like if they've listened to the podcast, then they come to the live stream and they're kind of amazed at how different it sounds because I've kind of learned where to cut so it doesn't sound like I've cut anything. And so people also think I'm a lot faster at reading the chat room than I really am.
Yeah, you know you're doing sound production well when nobody comments on it. Because usually if someone talks about your sound, it's because they have a complaint.
Yeah. I have a question. Just for anybody else who podcasts in here, what would you say your standard ratio is of time editing? Is it 3-to-1? Is it 4-to-1? 6-to-1?
I'm an aberration, so I'm not even going to touch this. Yeah. But...
Well, I know I'm an aberration. I've never met anybody that spent as long as I did on a single 20-minute episode. My first podcast was clubkidcast.com, which is pod faded graciously. I now have a life. It was my first podcast, 20-minute stories for kids, and it's a lot of fun. I just really had a lot of blast with it. I'd pick a public domain story, such as The Velveteen Rabbit or Tom Thumb or something like that, and just do the story. I do all the voices. I have a music background, so I did all the scoring for it, so all the music was original. I did all the sound effects and you know, brought in all the sound effects, so it's completely soundscaped. And kids, man, I mean, we'd put this on, and a group of kids in a room, and they would be just glued to the speakers, just loved it. Average time it took me to turn out 20 minutes was 40 hours.
Okay, you have me beat.
Anybody got better than that?
Did you want to say?
Yeah, keep. How many episodes did you have?
I did like 7 episodes.
Okay.
You might want to come.
I'll host them. Come to me. That sounds awesome.
Hey. Give you another rate show. We do two podcasts. One is an author interview
folks, show. Folks, there are people talking. So, guys, okay.
Well, I can wrap it up instead and just talk.
Oh, no, it's okay. No,
just to give you another rate show. We with the author interview show. The episodes are typically half an hour of audio time. Uh-huh. We actually get the advanced reader copy and read it in detail. So you're looking at 8 to 10 hours probably of reading and coming up with questions. About an hour of recording time. And then I listen for where the audits are going to, or edits are going to fall, and try to make a more coherent interview. Generally, I try to cut into the interviewers more than the interviewees. We try to leave their audio as organic as possible, unless it's highly redundant and one section can go without changing anything. It takes me 4 to 6 hours to listen through and place all the edits. I come up with a Word document, and then I send it to my partner in the podcast, who's a lot more technically savvy. He does media production, so he uses Final Cut. Takes him another 3 or 4 to edit. So if you add up our combined time, we've probably got 25 hours of reading. We've got 8 hours or so of editing time, plus show dropping and stuff for a half-hour show.
And just to make clear for those who are now like scared off of ever podcasting, that's not strictly necessary in many. Well, it depends on the context. It depends on what you're trying to present. Like if you're trying to do audiobook quality standards of things, then yeah, that takes a lot more editing time. If you're doing just casual interviews or things, it doesn't necessarily have to take that long.
Ours are a little less scary. Amber and I have a show we host called Mostly ITP, which is about mostly inside the perimeter. It's mostly casual interviews and things. Our editing is maybe a 3-to-1 ratio. You know, we just level off the sound, get rid of a few of the ums and things, but we're not really interested in it. It always sounds very conversational. We don't really edit heavily. Anybody else?
Ginger Campbell, the Brain Science Podcast. I think my ratio is about 3-to-1. I like to think since I've just started, it's going to improve. But my prep time that eats my life is reading the science that I'm going to talk about. I mean, it might take me a month
research
to research something that I'm going to talk about on a podcast, which is why I can only put it out every other week.
Yeah. We like to compare ourselves to radio and TV all the time, but you think of something like This American Life, the size of their staff, you know, they have a couple dozen people, you know, putting their stuff together. That's how they can do an hour show every week. Most of us are trying to do it, it's just one or two people.
My newest podcast is, it's actually a vidcast, and it's almost a direct opposite of what my first podcast was in terms of time. There's a 1-to-1 ratio. It's called Carter's Frozen Dinners, and essentially I'm a big guy. I need to learn portion control. I'm also a stay-at-home dad taking care of a 4-month-old and running a company. I don't have time for complicated meal plans. So I just grab, you know, the lean cuisine thing that's limited calories and portion size and all of that. It takes me 5 minutes to warm it up, put it down on a plate, and I have my N93, my Nokia video phone set up above it on this tripod thing I've created. take a picture, or, you know, look at the box, compare it to the real thing, take one bite, talk about what it tastes like. And I'm a gourmand. I mean, I love food. So this is all very tongue in cheek for me. People that know me go, what are you doing eating that stuff? Anyway, but I figure there's people out there that want to know, you know, what does this stuff taste like? So I'm telling them. Anyway,
that's awesome.
I video it. It's all of 3 minutes long. Then while I'm eating the rest of it, I'm sending it from the phone to Blip. Blip cross posts it to my blog, and it's live by the time I'm done.
Beautiful.
Do we have time for one more question?
Okay.
All right, last question. Anybody? All right, we're past 2:30. Well, then maybe let's wrap it up.
All right. Have fun, everyone.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on Magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to Unconcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of Unconcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.